This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And this afternoon, another candidate interview talking to Republican candidate for Governor Christine Drazen. Thanks for being on with us today.
It's great to be back.
And first of all, start out by giving us kind of some overall thoughts about how you think the campaign is going right now.
The campaign's going really well. It's been incredible to talk to Oregonians across the state who are just so anxious for this election to get here so that they can vote for change. They're looking for, you know, more voice in what happens in their kids' classrooms. They're looking for safer communities, more affordability, lower taxes. All of the kinds of issues that I stand for are the issues that Oregonians are asking for relief on. So it's been a pretty incredible opportunity to crisscross the entire state and talk to Oregonians of all shapes, sizes, and political affiliations who are just looking for this election to have their voices heard.
Now, this race is getting a lot of national attention. Both the Democratic and Republican parties getting behind the candidates. You were even on national media earlier today, right here on KQEN, on with Clay Travis and Buck Sexton. I mean, that is probably a rarity. I don't recall them ever talking to a candidate for much of anything in Oregon.
Well, that really just goes to show how historic this race is shaping up to be. I mean, we are a true toss-up race right now, but the race really does come down to a choice between me and Tina Kotek. We're the two that are running neck and neck in this race, and that's pretty extraordinary, and it's an incredible opportunity to talk to folks about this race, and in particular, you know, the opportunity to get on national press and national media to really elevate the concerns we have here in Oregon is really, really important.
Now, we haven't had a GOP governor in Oregon since Vic Atiyah, who left early in 1987. Does it feel winnable this time around?
Oregonians deserve change, and Oregonians are the ones that are making this a toss-up race. They're the ones that are choosing a new direction for our state. So, you know, I am aware that Vic Atiyah, when he was governor, that's about the time that the original Top Gun was in the theaters, and now we're back for a sequel. And Oregonians themselves are calling for change, and they're ready for a Republican governor. It will be a sea change for our state that will restore balance and will benefit Oregonians in all corners of our state.
What do you think has led to what you believe this movement is calling for the change?
Well, it's how it feels to live here as an Oregonian. You know, we have among the highest taxes in the nation. It's one of the least affordable places to live in the nation. We are less safe than we've ever been. Our schools continue to lag behind national standards. We have Democrat leaders in particular who've made the decision to abandon graduation requirements, to frankly leave our kids behind and abandon our kids rather than help them get up to grade level and up to standards. They've lowered those standards instead. And families see it, and we are all experiencing this decade of decline. And I haven't even, you know, mentioned homelessness and the fact that we have legalized hard drugs in our state. That's all under the leadership of single-party control. Oregonians, they deserve better. It's not that, you know, this happened suddenly. It's been happening slowly over time. But now we're seeing all of it. We're feeling it in a way that it's just piling on. And after COVID and after the shutdowns and everything that we all experienced, they are demanding change.
What are the key issues that you're focused on as you look towards November?
Homelessness is a critical issue across our state. There is a way forward on that issue, and I will declare a homelessness state of emergency where we have the opportunity to marshal resources at all levels of government, but in particular provide compassionate response to the individuals that are on our street, but stop enabling the continued presence of encampments in public spaces and, you know, and just open-air drug use across our state. So we have to repeal Measure 110, and with the intent to repeal and replace. So you would have the opportunity to maintain support for mental and behavioral health treatment, but not maintain the legalization of possession of hard drugs. That's very, very important to address our real homelessness crisis that we have. It's not just a housing first response. It's got to be to address the holistic challenges that we have, which certainly continue to be the rising use of drugs on our streets. So homelessness, crime are connected, support law enforcement, and then affordability and education. Oregonians recognize that they're having to make choices right now. Some of it's inflation, some is Biden related, but we also at a state level have played a part in that. We've had at the legislative level, they passed $3 billion in new taxes and fees in a 6-month period back when they first got, you know, deep, strong supermajorities in Salem. And that's harmed everyday Oregonians, and we're feeling it at the pump and we're feeling it at the grocery store. So affordability, education, homelessness, and crime are really the top issues.
You know, talk about the dynamics of this three-way race, unprecedented in many decades in Oregon history.
Yeah, it is an exciting time to be an Oregonian and have real choices and an opportunity for real change at the ballot in the governor's office this year. But really, it's a two-way race. This is a race between me and Tina Kotek, Oregon's longest-serving House Speaker of the House. And she has been, you know, the original defund the police. She is personally engaged in linking arms with rioters rather than confronting the violence in our streets. And she represents a stark contrast to my commitment to bring change to our state. She has been leading our state along with Kate Brown for the last decade, and Oregonians want change. And that's really how this race comes down to. There are three people on the ballot. Actually, there's more than three people on the ballot. But the two people that are actually competing to be Oregon's next governor includes me and Tina Kotek.
And talk about your work as a legislative staffer. You were involved behind the scenes for a long time, and I'm curious what caused you to leave that and then to ultimately later run for office.
Yeah, I was raised in this family that just talked politics all the time because, you know, in a small town in Oregon, rural Oregon, they are impacted by decisions that are made in Salem and mostly in ways that are negative. You know, they want to have more local control. They want to have better jobs. They want to engage in natural resource-based industries that, frankly, on the other side of the aisle, sometimes they put that life and a rural existence in the crosshairs. It's not that they don't just not understand it. They don't respect it enough to allow it to be able to continue and to thrive and for people to choose how they live and where they live and how they support their families. That was the family I grew up in, which meant that they talked politics all the time, and they made this connection for me between what was going on in our families and the politicians that were elected to serve who were leaving people behind or targeting them on purpose. So it was an opportunity for me fresh out of college to see for myself exactly what politics was all about. And it was an opportunity also for me to engage in a way that supported my commitment to my state. And so I had the opportunity for 8 years to work inside Salem as a staff person while Republicans had majority control of the House and the Senate. And I left that when my husband and I had our oldest son and the schedule was just grueling. And I wanted to be able to raise my family and I wanted to be able to engage and participate locally in my church and my community and all the things you do, you know, when you have a little bit more control over your schedule and your life. But really, the decision to run for office for me when I did make that decision was really all about recognizing that our state, in fact, is going the wrong direction. And single party control doesn't support our values as Oregonians that we deserve respect, that our state is diverse, and that every corner of our state needs to have unique solutions to the challenges that they face and the unique opportunities in those parts of the state. And instead, we've had top-down mandates. We've had single party control. We've had a level of disrespect that makes it really hard for people to thrive across our state. Running for office is an opportunity to make a difference in that. It's an opportunity to serve my community and push for change and frankly, try to do my absolute best to restore balance in our beautiful state. I mean, Oregon is among the most incredible states across the nation, and we are in a tough spot right now. It's gonna take new leadership. It's gonna take more balance, more accountability. And it's going to take people that are willing to stand up for all corners of our state and not allow top-down mandates to crush the Oregon spirit any longer. And that's why I ran for office, to be a part of that.
All right, going to take a break. More when we come back with Christine Drazen. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. Inside Douglas County, back in a minute on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1246, Lars Larson at 1, David Littlejohn and True Wealth Radio, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. On tomorrow, you'll meet the new CEO of the YMCA of Douglas County, Stephen Stanfield. Christine Drazen, Republican candidate for governor, back on with us again. If you're elected and you look at your first 30 days in office, what are your priorities going to be as you get started?
You know, the first thing that I'm going to do is to tear up Kate Brown's executive order on cap and trade. When the governor did not get what she wanted, when she didn't get Oregon tied to California's cap and trade program, you know, that in the meantime has caused rolling blackouts and a dramatic increase in the cost for energy down there. When she didn't get that, she instituted it as an executive order that has slowly been having agencies develop rules to impose that on Oregonians. And I'm going to tear up that executive order. I don't believe it was appropriate. I don't believe that it was within the scope of her authority, that office. And I'm going to make sure that it does not continue. Additionally, I'm going to declare a homelessness state of emergency to ensure that we can marshal resources at all levels of government. All these folks are engaging in issues to resolve homelessness right now, but we're not seeing enough progress on the street. And that's a question of leadership. And the homelessness state of emergency is an opportunity to kind of clear the decks and lower barriers and create a requirement that we really get this work done together. And next, we have got to start from scratch when it comes to our agency leadership. We have had Democrat control, Democrats in the governor's office, as we've mentioned, for multiple decades now. And for me to move forward and to serve and support Oregonians and commit to customer service oriented, back to core mission government that serves Oregonians first, I will fire Kate Brown's agency heads. That means that I will have the opportunity to hire folks that are experts in their fields and are committed to ensuring that, you know, DMV lines aren't 2-3 hours long, and that we actually build roads, and that we actually serve foster kids, and that we have strong schools that get politics out of the classroom. That is an opportunity that we have only with a new governor in the governor's office. And so, you know, that first 30 days is also going to be really busy preparing for the long legislative session. It is the obligation of the governor's office to propose a balanced budget. And I will propose a balanced budget that creates a sustainable long-term budget for our state. When Kate went into this job, Kate Brown made the decision to stop proposing budgets that also included a look at the cost increases of those budgets over the course of a decade. Governor Kitzhaber, who was in that office before her, had instituted a requirement for agencies when they propose budgets to also take a look at what does this do long term? Can we afford it? And Governor Brown made the decision to tear up that executive order that required that work, but I will reinstitute that. We have got to begin to not just budget for this two-year period. We've got to create sustainable long-term budgets that don't simply grow the size of government. In 10 years, Oregon's budget's doubled in size. That is not sustainable long-term, and we've got to take a longer-term view of this budget. And my budget will fully fund state police. My budget will ensure that we do prioritize kids and students, but at the same time, we've got to get politics out of the classroom and get back to supporting standards and supporting outcomes for our kiddos and not using our schools as a way to indoctrinate our students.
Now, while the Republicans are expecting to make some gains in the legislature, if you're elected, you're likely governing with Democrats still in the majority. Talk about the challenges of that.
Well, that actually is really beneficial to Oregonians. I view that as something that that Oregonians should welcome, this idea that we have a Republican in the governor's office, and if we still have Democrats in control of the legislature, that's beneficial. That's how you come to balanced solutions. That's how you negotiate. That's how you work across the aisle in a way that's meaningful. For too long, with single party control, any bipartisanship has been one-sided. So if I have something that I want to move through the legislative process as the House Republican leader, I had to be bipartisan. It wasn't a hobby. It wasn't a one-off. Everything that I did had to be working with Democrats to get it done. But on the other side of the aisle, the Democrats weren't required to work with Republicans. So having a Republican in the governor's office forces that conversation, requires that bipartisanship. And I think that's really positive and beneficial for Oregonians long term.
What about dealing with federal lawmakers regarding forest management of their lands and the lands in Oregon? What would you propose?
You know, we need to put wildfires out when they start. So let's start the conversation there. For too long, we have had the federal government that has looked at the forest land that we have here in Oregon, and they've taken a let it burn approach. And, you know, just as an example, if you take the most recent Cedar Creek fire, it's been on the landscape for a while. They knew that we were going to experience an extended dry period, and that we were going to have low humidity, and that there were going to be winds, and, you know, that was going to be a challenging fire. There should have been a push to get that fire put out. And instead we saw the dark skies and the orange skies and, you know, the spread of those fires. And then we had evacuations again. It doesn't have to be that way every year. We need to start to manage our forests. And that means, you know, over 60% of Oregon's forests are owned by the federal government. There has got to be a sense of urgency out of the governor's office to work with and advocate for the federal government to engage in management of their forests. So that the decisions that they make on federal lands don't harm Oregonians.
What about, and you've talked about this some already, but talk about changes you'd make to education in Oregon.
Yeah, you know, this is an area that I personally am really excited about. I'm a mom of three, and I have been in our classroom. I volunteered in classrooms. I was on our school district's budget committee. And every opportunity I get to engage in locally on our education issues, I've taken it. This is such a critical issue for the future of our state. We have got to focus on academic accountability and individual student success again. We can do that by freeing up teachers to get back to the basics. And we do that by getting politics out of the classroom. Our classrooms have, not in all classrooms, but in too frequently, our classrooms have been distracted by larger political agendas that have been built into curriculum recently. As the superintendent of public instruction, I am going to pull the politics out of our curriculum. I'm gonna review curriculum and require that the curriculum that we impose on our schools and in our classrooms gets back to the basics. I mean, our kindergartners don't need to be having conversations about identity. Our kindergartners need to be, you know, learning, you know, fine motor skills. They need to be learning their ABCs and their 1-2-3s and how to, you know, keep their hands to themselves on carpet time. Like that should not be beyond us, right? We should be able to do that. And we should commit that our students should all learn how to read by third grade. We should commit to improve our graduation numbers, and not by dumbing down our requirements, but by actually providing supports to students to help them get there and close that achievement gap that too often we see between low-income students, homeless students, and students of color that are not performing at the same level as other students in the classroom with them. That is absolutely, absolutely offensive. We have got to provide the supports and interventions necessary to support all students and ensure that all students have the opportunity not just to learn but to succeed and to prepare them for what their best future holds for themselves. Whether or not that's career technical education or community colleges or higher education or getting right out into the workforce, we need to support our kids. And frankly, the future of our state depends on high standards and high expectations of our students. We cannot abandon our kids anymore. During COVID, they were left behind. We have got to return our focus to our kids, return our focus to our classrooms, and ensure that we are covering the basics.
With tech giant Intel putting a new plant in another state, a lot of attention recently to whether or not state government is business friendly. What are your thoughts?
You know, Oregon is one of the least business-friendly states in the nation, and it's horrible to say that out loud. It doesn't have to be this way. I mean, Oregon is an extraordinary state. There can be nothing other than just bad policies that would ever cause a business like Intel to go somewhere like Ohio instead of staying here in Oregon to build and expand. We have got to fight for job growth here in Oregon while at the same time protecting family budgets. We have got to put a moratorium on new regulations. I will review, repeal, and roll back regulations that are unnecessary and increase costs for businesses here in our state. We have got to work with businesses to ensure that not just that we keep the Intels of the future, but that our economy is strong in all corners of our state and that we don't pick winners and losers. Too often in the legislative process in particular, my colleagues made the decision to say, we're going to advance and support this industry while at the same time this other industry over here is going to fall out of favor and we're going to attack it. We're going to regulate it. We're going to tax it. And then it gets weaker and weaker and weaker. Well, the communities that are dependent on those businesses that have fallen out of political favor, what are they going to do? Where do they go next? Where do they go for jobs? Where do those families go for stability? That's not how we should operate. We need to have free markets to support families, and we need to have good jobs across our entire state.
All right, out of time for now. We'll talk again soon. Christine Drazen, Republican candidate for governor. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Kyle.
1257 Inside Douglas County, News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.